My name is Ismail. I'm from Turkey. I value my family, I value my freedom, and I value other people's life.
My values are universal. They are similar to other people's values.
Maltese value their family, their traditions, their culture, and most importantly, their religion.
I'm Sabrina. I'm from Germany, but I have an Italian background, and what I value most is my family and my friends. That's pretty much the most important thing of my life.
My name is Thomas. I come from Hong Kong. The thing that I value most in Australia is its openness and its freedom. Tolerance is also very important.
As a reaction to heightened ethnic tensions in Australia, the federal government has raised the idea of a citizenship test for newly arrived migrants. Part of the test involves an adherence to something called Australian values. While it is uncertain what the government means by Australian values, there have, in the past, been several very general theories for grouping together people of a specific region or country. And every single time, these theories are shown to be false, unworkable, and just too general. Today we look at a theory from the 1990s called Asian values, a clumping together of the peoples from Korea to Indonesia, from India to Japan. Debunked by academics and eventually world leaders, the rise and fall of the theory of Asian values is a good indication of the problems facing a definition of Australian values. Dean of the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy at the National University of Singapore, Kishore Mahbubani, takes us through the Asian values debate.
One of the controversial statements I make about the Asian values debate is that the term Asian values was not coined by Asians. It was indeed coined by those in the West who were trying to find an easy way to capture point of view that was different from the West. And so they created this concept of Asian values and applied it to people like Mr. Lee Kuan Yew, Dr. Mahathir, and you know, some other writers and so on and so forth. But the Asians themselves never specifically claimed that there was a specific set of values that were uniquely Asian. Indeed, most Asian societies have thrived in recent years by combining both modern Western values as well as traditional Asian values. And some of the traditional Asian values, by the way, are similar to traditional Western values. I mean, the clearest example being family values, you know. Family values are found in the West, family values are found in Asia, so they're not unique to any particular culture.
Gary Rodan is the director of the Asia Research Centre at Murdoch University. He says that the term Asian values was used to explain the combination of the more conservative elements of Western life with many of the political motives of authoritarian governments in the region.
Well, in all cases, they were universal values about the importance of family, the desirability of acting collectively, importance of education, all sorts of very broad statements about values which couldn't be argued in any serious sense to be exclusively Confucian or Asian. Rather, they were predominantly socially conservative values that had, in many cases, been first articulated in any coherent way in the West by classical conservatives. And the one abiding theme to most of these attempts to articulate content to Asian values was that opposition was considered Western and liberalism was considered Western. Apparently, conservatism wasn't considered Western, that was quite Asian. So there was a juxtaposition of West against East, which was clearly trying to frame the whole debate about political futures and political possibilities in such a way that anybody within Asia who advocated increased political pluralism could be depicted as being a stooge of the West. And really, tactically, that's what it was all about.
Do you agree or that Mahathir Mohamad and Lee Kuan Yew maybe did accept this term or ever use it? Did they use it?
No, I think they wanted to suggest, you know, my thesis is that at the end of the Cold War, there was a mood of triumphalism in the West that was getting captured brilliantly in Francis Fukuyama's essay, The End of History, where he said that we had reached the end of history, and please forgive me for summarizing his thesis too crudely, but essentially what he said was that all societies in the world were going to become carbon copies of liberal democratic societies in the West. I think one of the arguments made by people like Dr. Mahathir Mohamad and Mr. Lee Kuan Yew and others was that we would not necessarily become carbon copies, you know, that we would accept some of the strengths of the West, but at the same time draw a line on some of the other areas, you know. And that debate, as you know, has died down since then. And one reason it has died down is that the mood of triumphalism that exists in the West has disappeared. The moral complexity of issues like Bosnia and others made Westerners think twice about promoting democracy immediately.
You mentioned some differences, or at least comparing Eastern values and Western values. Is there a distinct border between the East and the West, and no. Or is that always moving as well?
No, I think that's moving. In fact, it's moving even more nowadays, you know. I mean, even if you take a society like Japan, for example, how you treat the aged, for example, you know, is changing. And clearly you find that people who are getting old in Asian societies, who used to believe that their children will support them forever, have now come to accept the fact that they will have to become more self-reliant as they get older. So that's an Asian value that is changing and that is moving closer to the Western value. You can decide whether it's right or wrong, but you empirically, it is a fact that the values are changing.
If you look at a place like Singapore, for example, the use of maids, which is a sort of incorporation of colonial mentality, even pre-capitalist colonial mentality in some respects, subverts the traditional role of some people within the family. And Singapore, like every other advanced capitalist country, has undergone dramatic social changes that have affected the division of labour between men and women, mother, father, and in that respect, it's very hard to identify any durable pattern of family relationships in Singapore or in many other countries that has been any more effective in the face of dramatic social and economic changes. Sure, there are differences, but when you take into account the stages of development and the nature of those capitalist economies, the overriding similarity is what strikes me, namely that all these relationships are in a state of flux, and that if you want to understand the directions and the variations, then you can't do so without a serious analysis of capitalism and the changing influence of certain values associated with materialist capitalist societies. And in that respect, arguably the changes are even more dramatic and even less complete. That is, that we can expect even more change to happen in the next 10 to 15 years within Asia.
There has been a reaction in Asian societies to some of the what you might call the more liberal, permissive Western values. And the easiest example to suggest, and I of course suggest this very carefully and delicately because I don't want to be misunderstood in any way. No Asian politician today in virtually any Asian society would get elected democratically if he says that he wants to promote gay rights in his society. Asian societies are not ready yet, you know, to accept that. They may tolerate it, they may accept it privately, but the kind of open declarations you find in the West are still not acceptable in Asian societies yet. That's one example, you know. Certainly, if you look at the value of marriage, for example, in most Asian societies, most parents would be very reluctant to accept their children living together while they're not married, you know. Whereas in the West today, it's now accepted, it's quite normal. Indeed, you provide legal right to companions or to partners. But most Asian societies are not ready to do that yet. I mean, these are just some examples of how there are some areas where there are differences between Asian societies and Western societies. On both sides, by the way, you're dealing with moving target. Values are changing in the Asia, values are changing in the West. And indeed, what makes the 21st century so remarkable is about this is the enormous confusion in people's minds about what values they should adhere to nowadays.
Art has forever been a way that individuals and cultures alike enlighten the world to the distinct thoughts and memories of a people. Artworks often display the collective values of a people, but Claire Su, the executive director of the Asia Art Archive in Hong Kong, believes that characterising the art of Asia, especially within a term such as Asian values, is not so easy to define.
The Asia Archive, the goal of the organisation is to document and archive developments in the contemporary Asian art field. And one thing that we've realised from the very beginning is that when we say Asia, it's almost impossible to define. And it's made up of many, many different cultures, languages, religions, appearances. People look completely different from one end of a country to another. And while there might be, certain sensibilities or values in the way that, people are brought up, I think at the same time you need to really look at Asia as multifaceted, multidimensional. And it can't really neatly fit into one particular box.
How about when an artwork from Asia, from an Asian nation, is exhibited alongside a Greek piece of art or in a foreign place in Austria? Does that Asian art literally scream out something about Asian values?
I think it's difficult to make generalizations like that. I think it really depends on the artwork. It depends on the context the artwork is being shown in. Sometimes you have these survey shows of China or survey shows of Asian art. But I think if you take some of these works and put it just alongside, sort of a mix of different artworks from around the world, very often it is difficult to tell that one is particularly Asian or not. I think strong artwork that has a clear message and where the artist is able to convey that message well, I think it doesn't matter, where exactly the artwork is originating from.
Can you draw borders on this? Can there be Singaporean values? Can there be Malaysian values? Can there be Sri Lankan values?
Well, I think in the era of globalization, the idea that we can live in separate compartments, I think is a 19th century notion, I believe. I think one result of globalization is that whereas previously when you lived in different countries, you felt like you were living on different boats. Today, when you live in different countries, it's a bit more like living on different cabins on the same boat. So whether we like it or not, we are all being affected in an increasing fashion by the forces of globalization. And this is true, by the way, also in the area of values, incidentally. If you go to China, for example, and you look, even a country like China, which is large and which has 4,000 years of history, acknowledges that the younger people in China want to have, in a sense, more open Western values also injected into Chinese society. So they want a combination of traditional Chinese values and introduction of new Western values in China too. So you find that the reason I always suggest is that we are lucky to be in the Asia-Pacific region, because in the Asia-Pacific region, what we will see is a great explosion of creativity which will result from the fusion of Eastern and Western values. And we should, in fact, play on the strength that we have in our region, our capacity to bring together the best of the East and the best of the West. And if we remain open to both of these sources, then we can really succeed and do very well.
If we can't draw a distinct document about national values, then we really couldn't do one for Asian values, could we?
It's a preposterous notion.
How about European values?
Same again.
American values?
No, this is all grounded in the assumption that the nation state, that nationalism is the starting point and the reference point for the ideas that inspire people and that are the basis of civilized, tolerant societies. It's a false assumption. The ideas and values that inspire and threaten people around the world are not confined to a particular nation state. It's a very crude, ahistorical and unsophisticated way of viewing the process by which people come to subscribe to certain values and how they are disseminated. Ooh.